The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Is there reason to be hopeful in the commodity markets? We'll ask that question and many more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jim Wiesemeyer of Informa. We're hopeful he can bring us up to speed on the political climate for agriculture and ethanol in Washington, D.C. Our panelists in studio for this edition of Commodity Week are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Dave Jansen of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and Jackie Bakes of the Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Let's start with this question. Jackie Bakes, is the marketplace ready to bottom out for this harvest season?
Well, we'd certainly all like to believe that. I think that the nice gains that we had this week early have come primarily because we saw the dollar go down, crude go up, and, of course, the Dow has had four solid days of positive gains. If we continue in that type of a scenario, I think we've got a good chance. It didn't hurt us at all either that China cut the interest rate. You know, those were some pretty positive things to us. The thing we're still lacking is we haven't seen the letters of credit come back to importers. And once we start to see a break in that, it should increase the Baltic freight rates, and that'll give us a really good idea as to when we put the bottom in.
Dave Jansen?
I'm just really concerned yet with demand continuing to keep on coming down a little bit. With some ethanol demand going down, some feed usage going down, exports were still uncompetitive on a lot of corn export destinations at this point in time. And again, until we can see a change in trend, I think there's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines wanting to go ahead and buy this market, waiting for a change in trend, and we just don't have it yet.
And Wayne Nelson.
Well, Todd, this sure looks like a market that should be tired of going down and doesn't look like it should want to go down a lot more at this point in time. So we'd like to think that the odds are better to go on up than to go on down at this point in time. But Dave's made an awful lot of good points of why we might not have totally hit the bottom as of yet. But time of year, the way that crude oil is acting, if we can see a stabilization of crude oil here at 50 and retrace towards the $60 level, well, I think that we could have turned the corner.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to a special edition of the Closing Market Report. The program is called Commodity Week. It airs on the weekend. It's our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers. Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Our panelists in studio for this edition of Commodity Week are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Dave Jansen of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and Jackie Bakes of the Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Last week, you happened to mention the Baltic freight rates, Jackie. Last week during the Commodity Week program, actually after the Commodity Week program, in a program we call After the Bell, only shows up for those who happen to subscribe to our weekend ag newsletter. You can do that at willag.org. The Commodity Week panel then all agreed that if freight rates started to turn, that would signal a turn in the economy and, of course, a turn in the commodity market. So tell me more about what that really means and how you watch it, and when does it turn?
Well, it turns when there's demand. Right now we have ships that are sitting idle. The news today wasn't good because the freight rate is the lowest it's been since 1987. And so that just indicates to us, I don't believe that. It doesn't mean that there isn't a demand for our product. It's just this issue about being able to get credit and to be able to buy our product. So when the Baltic freight rate starts to rise, it just means that there's more competition for ships again.
Dave, tell me about credit in the ag world and how it differs for farmers and the bigger businesses. What do you hear about credit across the marketplace?
I think there's a lot of people that are really concerned. I mean, for a long time, I think we in the agriculture industry, I thought we were immune to it. But I think this last 2 months, it's made a lot of ag lenders nervous, and a lot of farmers nervous too. I mean, you start looking at input costs for 2009 corn and what values you're looking at, and boy, there's some scary numbers on that page. And you know, we could always look back to land values holding, holding firm to be able to make balance sheets look good, but. Boy, you can get real ugly real fast, especially on current year situations. So I think it's made a lot of people real nervous.
Well, land values are holding, but the cost of inputs are high and continue to be high. Credit may or may not be hard to get for producers. Does that mean we'll have more soybean acres, do you think, next year, or is that just the way it sets up at this time?
At this point in time, Todd, there's going to be more bean acres for the simple fact I do think that the lenders are very nervous, and I think there will be some tightening of credit in individual instances. Unless they can pencil out a profit, they're going to be hard-pressed to get loans from a lot of these bankers. We have to remember these bankers are in a whole different situation because of all the problems we've had and all the restrictions coming down on them, and they're going to be watched very closely. So I was at a seminar just this week, and boy, if you looked around at the bankers in the room, none of them looked happy. They all had their arms folded, and they were listening very closely to see if they thought corn could get back up or be 450 above that and make that balance sheet work so they could go ahead with their loans.
Everybody in agreement that there'll be more bean acres in the United States at this point should the economy not change? Does anybody disagree with that? Okay, given that, maybe we can talk about how producers can protect themselves or should use this as a marketing advantage if they have that knowledge. Anybody thought much about that and what you can and cannot do or should and should not do? Dave?
I think it, you know, we just did a study here this last week and just taking a look at various yield and price scenarios and looking at about 100 different combinations of yield and price. And you know, the numbers we were using, about 70% of them were coming up negative on corn. And you look at the bean side of things, of those 100 possible combinations, only about 5 or 6 were coming up negative for beans. And, I think there's a lot of farmers that want to plant corn, and there's going to be a lot of acres that are going to be uncommitted as we get into spring here. But I don't know. I think something's got to give with that situation. It could be that beans go down, corn stays where itself. It could be that corn's got to rally to buy acres. But I'll tell you one thing, a carryover is going to look extremely tight. You start losing a few million corn acres.
Well, that's the truth. And when you look at the bean situation, too, the 2008 crop is certainly not – it's proving that it's not a very good crop. When you look at the crush and the oil numbers, the crush is down, the oil's down, which means the quality of the beans are down. and we've got awfully tight bean stocks. So I think that the potential is certainly there to see both of them try and take some acres. You know, in other words, there could be somewhat of a fight in between. But at this point in time, beans certainly went out. There's no question about it.
They're right. Beans, you said that beans went out. But I'm still looking for an answer as to how producers can take advantage of that knowledge at this point. Or are we just stuck with the outside market yet because we don't know what the economy is going to do?
Well, we're very much stuck with the outside markets. There's no question about that. I mean, the best thing that a farmer could do if he wants to protect himself is do a bare put spread or something like that, you know, in an option situation and just get himself a floor price.
Well, Todd, of course, the outside market's been driving all of this. You know, as I say to a lot of people, I've been trying to figure out a different way to tell people it depends on what crude oil is doing every morning for the last 2 months when they ask me what corn or beans are going to do. Now, as we look at this, we do feel that there should be a little bit of a seasonal pop, and we are going to be some aggressive sellers of part of our bean crop if we can get up anywhere close to that $10 mark to $10.50. Basis November 09, and I think we do want to price some in there for the idea that there are going to be extra bean acres. So, yes, we're looking at it. We've priced a very few earlier before they went on down, and we're looking to price a few more.
Does 10-10-50 seem like an awful long way away at this point? You think there's really that kind of pop? This is for the 09
crop.
For 09 crop, right?
Yeah. Is it possible? I mean, that's what we're looking towards. I mean, you know, as we're sitting here, you don't want to shoot for an $8 mark. That doesn't make much money. So we're looking ahead to a few things happening positively. We're looking for a possible change in crude oil to pop $10 up here if we get a little good news or get things stabilized along the way. You know, we see some demands pop back in this market in the export business. Well, we're going to have a little bit of a pop in here sometime.
I don't know. One of the recommendations we put out this week here is just trying to look at trying to get some beans done. Not a lot, but trying to get a little bit done here anyway for 09. There are some things that are out there that give you the potential to rally. I mean, you look to South America, you still have some questions about weather. You have some questions about credit and their situation on how much fertilizer was put out. You've got some questions on are they going to have enough money and credit available to, you know, to be able to spray for rust should that happen. So there's some possibilities that are out there that can give us some pops, but you know, if everybody's looking at the same situation, planting more bean acres, I just have this fear of the factor that we may not get what we want.
Well, if we had that many more bean acres, let me back up. Do you really think that producers will be, and I think they would have to be forced to put bean acres in as opposed to corn acres, that they simply couldn't buy the inputs? Are we to that point?
No, Todd, we're not to that point. We're saying that it's more favorable that we'll see a few more bean acres. There's going to be a few people because of their bankers plant bean acres. But farmers like to plant corn. The odds are we're still going to plant more corn acres than we did this last year if we can see just a little bit of a bounce back to where it's not a negative return or looking at things that way. So we're not saying that everybody is going to switch like that. Somebody asked me the other day, they says, well, how many of your customers really would switch to, say, a 90-10 ratio just because what the figures say? I could only think of two, you know, of my customers that do that and will switch that heavily. I mean, the rest of them, they're maybe in a 70-30 corn rotation that favor that, and that might go 10 or 20%, but you know, there's not a lot of farmers that will go down to only 10% of the other crop down there just because of what the numbers say here to start with.
There were fewer corn acres in 08 than there were in 07. Will we have more corn acres just in 09? This is one of the things that we've just thrown out.
Well, my opinion is we won't have more. I think we could have as many as what we had. The one thing we can't discount is how much anhydrous was bought ahead of time. There's been a lot of anhydrous put on right now. And so, you know, they're more or less locked in, and that's going to be corn. There's no question about it.
All right, so they're anhydrous. Let's work with that scenario. So we have a producer, he has anhydrous locked in. Let's say it's locked in at 850 or 800 or something along those lines as opposed to the top at 1,000. What should that producer be doing today, if anything, to protect that investment, because he has an awful lot of money wrapped up in corn acres that don't appear that they're going to yield a whole lot in terms of income next year.
We're talking about somebody who didn't do anything when he had the opportunity when
Correct.
He bought the higher anhydrous. I think it's really difficult right now to say to somebody to lock in these prices, even though, you know, we've got more than full carry in the market. They have to know their bottom line. And if they know their bottom line and they can lock in a profit, they should at least do part of the crop.
I agree with Jackie on that to a degree. But I'm also going to say right now we're recommending sit on your hands as far as corn marketings, because we aren't locking in profits in most cases. We're locking in losses. And it's really hard to want to do that when there is some optimism out there. You know, we're talking about farmers. That's an optimistic community. They're not pessimists. They're optimists. And, you know, we're not ready to lock in a loss right yet.
I'm of the situation of long-term, very bullish corn. I mean, I know it's hard to say when in the short-term-wise things don't look like they're done and over yet, but, you know, those carryovers look relatively tight out there. And, you know, if we lose some of this corn acreage, that potentially, you know, ends up going over to beans. I mean, we've got ourselves into a situation, a little bit of a pickle here, if all of a sudden we have any kind of problem with the crop, those type of things with that. And it's almost, I guess, a little bit of a contrarian view, I guess, is what I'm seeing.
Todd, I think we're going to have a new president here in January. We've got an acting new president already. But I think that we have to look and see what's he going to do in mandating ethanol.
Well, I'm with Dave. I'm long-term bullish corn also, and I think one of the things that we overlook all the time is even though we've had a rally in the dollar, we've seen the Japanese yen go right with us, you know, so they are still our biggest buyer of corn.
In just 2 minutes, we'll talk with Jim Wiesmeyer. We'll get an update on how things are faring in Washington, D.C. Jim, of course, is with Informa.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. It was another cold, dry week in Illinois leading up to a November that should end up with below normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. After a cold start to the week, a warming trend kicked in on Wednesday as high pressure drifted off to the east and wind shifted into a southerly direction. After several days with temperatures generally below normal, highs reached the 40s to low 50s on Wednesday and even a few degrees higher than that on Thanksgiving Day. All that added up to no weather-related travel problems in Illinois and throughout much of the Midwest over the first half of the Thanksgiving weekend. The only precipitation of consequence this week was some light snow in northern Illinois and rain showers in central and southern Illinois with a frontal passage early in the week. With the new week comes the start of December and the start of meteorological winter. The weather will seem rather winter-like for the first half of the week. Some light snow is possible on Sunday into Monday as cold air once again plunges through Illinois. That will be followed by a day or two of moderating temperatures ahead of another push of cold air into Illinois for the last half of the week and into the weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It's a production of WILL AM 580 from the University of Illinois. You can visit our website if you'd like. It's at willag.org. That's willag.org. Commodity Week, available as a podcast. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded November the 26th, a Wednesday. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio are Dave Jansen of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Our guest on Commodity Week today is Informa's Jim Wiesmeyer. Jim has a column, Inside Washington Today. You can find it on the Ag website at agweb.com. He's reported on major farm bills and trade policy in Washington, D.C. since 1978. Hi, Jim.
How you doing?
That sounds like a long time ago today, doesn't it?
It has been.
Well, what's your assessment of Washington, D.C. today?
Well, first I wanted to tell you I was in Bloomington, Illinois this past week. There were about 400 to 500 farmers, and while their mood was still pretty good, there's a lot of anxiety of what lies ahead, both politically, but I think they have the number one question down pat. When is the U.S. and world economy, farmers are international now, thank goodness, when's the world economy going to turn around? And in that in mind, I told them that Washington, D.C. hopefully will heed the lesson of this past elections and the demand for leadership in Washington, D.C. at all levels.
No, did you have an answer for them as to when it would turn around?
Well, I told them it would be later rather than sooner. We still have to chew through a lot in the housing market. That doesn't mean you're not going to get opportunities, of course, from the marketing side, but the housing market is still ugly to very ugly, and it's going to be 18 months to 2 years before we get a solid indication of an L-shaped bottom, but a saucer bottom, and where we truly can turn higher what longer term is still going to be a demand pull market when it comes to agriculture because of the need for proteins around the world.
Hey, Jim, I read with great interest this week Obama's comments about the millionaire farmers and how he plans on going through and cutting subsidies. How do they determine who a millionaire farmer is?
They'll have their definition of on their gross returns, but when they're going to start reducing will be at least a year, if not 2 years from now, because even in the agriculture sector, you cannot go too fast, even though with the tremendous budget deficits that we will encounter. We're going to be over $1 trillion in the fiscal budget deficit for the current fiscal year, but Obama has consistently stated that with the downturn in the economy, the worst in decades, many decades, his number one issue has been and will continue to be the economic stimulus. And with that in mind, you're going to have anywhere from a $500 billion to a $700 billion stimulus package that will be acted on by a much strengthened Democratic majority in both the House and the Senate by the end of January. So that could well play into the other fundamentals that you all talked about relative to the acreage economics. So I think we've got a lot of big issues to watch as 209 unfolds.
Jim, Dave Jansen here. Do you see any last-minute changes in the Farm Bill implementation with the new administration?
They've been later rather than sooner on their implementation. I don't expect any big surprises. This crowd wants to get out of town as soon as possible, and a lot of people might say good to that. The one is the acre program, and I know a lot of corn producers want to know which years they're going to use for the acre, but frankly, I don't see any major surprises. I really don't.
You're listening to a special edition of the Closing Mark Report. The program is called Commodity Week. It airs on the weekend. It's our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. Our guest is Jim Wiesmeyer of Informa. More with him in 2 minutes.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry.
It's National French Toast Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1837, John Wesley Hyatt was born. He developed the process for making celluloid, the first synthetic plastic. He also invented a water purifying system, a sugarcane mill, and a widely used roller bearing. In 1863, Thanksgiving was first celebrated as a regular American holiday by proclamation of Abraham Lincoln. By the way, the first recorded Thanksgiving ceremony took place on September 8, 1565, when 600 Spanish settlers held a mass of Thanksgiving for their safe delivery to the New World, followed by a feast and celebration. In 1869, W.F. Semple of Mount Vernon, Ohio, was issued the first chewing gum patent. In 1942, coffee rationing began in the U.S. And in 2006, Texas Republican State Representative Betty Brown filed a bill in the state legislature which would declare Athens, Texas, as the original home of the hamburger. Residents of New Haven, Connecticut strongly objected. City fathers in New Haven say the hamburger was invented there at Lewis Lunch in 1900. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report, a special edition of Commodity Week, our weekend program. We were talking when we left with Jim Wiesemeyer of Informa.
Where does ethanol stand? Are we going to get a bailout for Verizon like we did for Citibank?
If they qualify, they can come on board. Ethanol is still motherhood and apple pie in Washington, D.C. You had Dick Durbin, the number two ranking senator, was the initial mentor, one of the initial mentors of President-elect Obama, and he is very pro-ethanol. I think one of the initial ones to watch out for is the outgoing administration when it comes to the so-called blend wall. The Environmental Protection Agency does indeed have a proposed rule that they're mulling to come out that would increase the blend rate from the current 10% anywhere to 12 to 14%. Now, that alone would help surviving ethanol facilities meet the coming increase in the mandate. So I would watch that issue as a major policy initiative.
If that capacity were increased, how would it be implemented? Does that mean we would see E12 at the pump or 15 rather than E10? Or are there other things that would happen?
Well, not E15. The 12 to 14. There must be something at that 15% mark that the legal people, and there's more than a few in Washington, D.C., in the justice area, says that they cannot go to relative to the Clean Water Act and other restrictions. But, yeah, you could well see the E12, E13, E14. From a legal perspective, the proponents of that say that it's still very similar to E10 enough that they can get by from an environmental perspective. But again, that would they're locked into conflicting regulations as it is now, because a number of crude oil facilities are exempt from the mandate because they're small. So that's making it harder for the larger facilities and or the blenders to meet that renewable fuel standard mandate. So again, that shouldn't come as any surprise that we have conflicting mandates coming out of government. But something's going to have to be done because it's going to be harder to reach that increasing corn-based ethanol mandate. But I do see a change coming.
Well, and that takes me right to, what happens if the 1st of January we suddenly see a lot more ethanol plants that are in jeopardy and or are reneging on contracts? What do you think their action would be, and how fast can they act?
Well, January the 20th will be the inauguration of Obama's administration. I think that they would find some way with this wide flexibility that we've already seen that Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson have relative to the now printing money that the Federal Reserve is doing to in order to accelerate the help. ailing ethanol industry. It can come in many different ways. But again, both political parties support the continuation of the renewable fuel industry, in particular the corn-based ethanol industry. So they would find a way to help out some way, somehow.
Jim Wiesmeyer is with Informa Economics. We're out of time here on the Closing Market Report. Thanks for listening. I'm Todd Gleason.